court will proceed to the fifth case, Jeff Boat versus OWCP. Mr. Matthews?
Good morning. I'm Doug Matthews for petitioner Jeff Boat. Jeff Boat is a Longshore Act employer who has requested review of the Benefit Review Board decision affirming the administrative law judge's award of a fee pursuant to 33 U.S.C. Section 928. This is a federal fee shifting act, as we have other federal fee shifting acts. I'm cognizant of this court's strong level of deference that is given to courts below in setting a reasonable fee under federal fee shifting acts. However, along with this court's guidelines, I do not think that the administrative law judge in this case followed any of those guidelines and rendered or determined a applicable hourly rate, a market rate, on facts that should not be considered in setting what a market rate is.
I have to say, Mr. Matthews, I find this appeal surprising, I'll choose that word, because the amount of fees awarded looks modest to my eyes, and even if you had gotten the hourly rates you were urging, it wouldn't have gone from 1689 down to zero. It would have gone down a few hundred dollars. I'm very surprised that you are taking the time and resources to pursue this appeal. I'm particularly surprised since then, on top of just the dollar amounts, as you acknowledge, we follow a deferential standard, and I don't think there's anything. Every time we come to the point in your brief where you say you can look only to the particular geographic locality, there's no citation. This court has never held that. Indeed, in Mather against Board of Southern Illinois University, we particularly said if an out-of-town attorney has a higher hourly rate than local practitioners, the district court should defer to the out-of-town attorney's rate when calculating the lodestar. So there's a lot going against you here.
Okay. I'd like to address your first point, and then I'll address the second point you anticipated in my next statement to the court. We are bringing this action or seeking this review, not because of the few thousand dollars that are included in this award of fees, but a respondent's counsel in this case has filed over 100 other claims against Jeff Boat in occupational illness and hearing loss cases, which are pending in the system. So the hourly rate that is determined, if it's a reasonable hourly rate, is going to have an effect on all subsequent claims if a fee is warranted in those claims. The issue as to local market rates, the court in Mather talked about, I should say, it's the fee applicant's burden first to establish what the local market rate is.
Well, let me back up, okay. Because actually, if you look at the statute and the regulations, they call for a reasonable attorney's fee. They don't pin reasonable down to a geographic area, to anything, recognizing that reasonable is going to be a multifaceted inquiry. It may have to do with the complexity of the case. It may have to do, a very skilled lawyer might be able to do something in 3 hours at a very high hourly rate that it would take an inexperienced lawyer 20 hours. And so you're actually better off with the higher. I mean, there are all these factors in there, and it seems to me the administrative law judge and the benefits review board here were making this holistic inquiry, and that's exactly why we at the Court of Appeals don't pick apart these questions.
Okay. Well, the Supreme Court in Hensley and Bloom and Congress in the 1988 legislation, all focused on the Fifth Circuit case of Johnson. And Johnson talked about current local market
rates. Well, but what the Supreme Court keeps saying, interestingly, is the relevant community. And it doesn't really define what the relevant community is, whether it's the community. From the lawyer's point of view, it's the opportunity cost of other cases not taken. And so from the lawyer's point of view, it might very much be the market in which the lawyer is practicing.
Well, but this court in the Mather case indicated that you do look at the local market, and if there are no attorneys available or who would take up that case in the local market, then
we adopted no such rule that you have to exhaust local attorneys first.
Well, I would suggest it's a corollary of that holding, and that there must at least be some showing on the part of the fee applicant that the plaintiff at least made a good faith attempt to find local counsel.
Why? What could possibly justify a rule like that?
Well, the case law I submit from the Supreme Court and other circuits indicate that the locality is important from where the claim arose. Also, under
I'm just asking you why. I can't imagine in a national legal market, if a client feels that he or she will be better represented by a lawyer from a different city, and the lawyer can get admitted to the local court and the right formalities are observed, why the client should be penalized for hiring somebody who's not a local person.
Attorney's fees are part of the reward the claimant gets under the Longshore Act. Each individual employer seeks insurance under the Longshore Act. Each area where that employer is rated by the insurance companies. One factor would most probably be the amount of attorney's fees that they have to pay in that area of the country. To allow people from New York to come into Indiana with $400 an hour rates, where the judges are awarding $200 an hour rates, would skew that computation insofar as the insurance premiums are concerned. Now, in this case, no evidence was presented of either the respondent's attorney's actual rates, which she charges other clients, nor did she enter any evidence of the local rates. The only evidence supporting any local rate was that the employer submitted, albeit an 8-year-old case, but during the period of time that was allowed for research of this, this was the one case the employer found. Thank you.
Mr. Matthews. Ms. Olson.
Good morning, Your Honors. May it please the Court, I'm Melissa Olson for the appellee, Larry Furrow. Your Honors, I request, and we're here today to request your affirmation of the Benefits Review Board decision and as well as the findings of facts of Judge Mosser. The only issue that we have before us today is whether or not Judge Mosser abused his discretion in awarding attorney fees in finding, in fact, that his findings were clearly erroneous. As we have previously heard, Judge Mosser's findings were based on the plethora of factors he has before him and he has in his arsenal. Pursuant to Code of Federal Regulation 702.132, Judge Mosser is enabled and is directed to look at the experience of the counsel, the quality of the work, the benefits obtained in light of the benefits obtained, first of all, which in this case were $29,734.59, including or in addition to medical care and treatment for the remainder of the claimant's life. So the benefits obtained in the successful prosecution of the case, but also in light of the fees requested, and as we mentioned before, the fees and costs requested in a successful prosecution of this case were $1,689.66, the fees and costs. Judge Monster is also, his finding is also based on factors that he's unable to review, including the necessary work performed, the attorney's normal billing rate, which was stated in the attorney's fee, fee petition.
Did you clearly state that? Because I thought there was some question whether you had furnished evidence for the administrative law judge to substantiate your regular billing rates.
Yes, thank you, Your Honor. And in fact, the fee application that we submitted indicated what my billing rates are. They were between $250 an hour and $261 an hour. The fee application is in fact a form of affidavit before the administrative law judges, and that has been found in case law before the BRB, Benefits Review Board. And in fact, when I submitted that fee application, those are my normal and actual billing rates.
So because this was a sworn statement, it's your position that there was nothing else that needed to substantiate that?
In addition, Your Honor, we submitted evidence along with our fee application, along with my fee application, including federal case involving a comparable case in this locality, as well as the other information that supports our fee application for the fees that we charge in these sorts of fee-shifting cases.
So what's your response to Mr. Matthews' point that insurance rating and the like looks at locality fees, not at potential fees, you know, as if somebody went out and hired lawyers from Los Angeles or New York to come in all the time?
Sure. Well, in fact, Your Honor, this is a national practice. The Longshore Act is a highly specialized and highly unique federal practice. In fact, not many attorneys practice this area of law and have chosen to specialize in this area of law. I happen to be the only attorney representing claimants in their rights and with their rights and benefits before the Longshore Act in the locality at this time. Anecdotally, I've done some research, and prior to 1997, there may have been some few attorneys doing that since then, I admit. But
you must have company down in New Orleans, at least.
Well, that's an interesting point, Your Honor. Thank you. I happen to hail from Connecticut. The attorney for Jeff Boat actually hails from New Orleans. So it goes to show that, in fact, the claimant needs to seek competent counsel out of state, as well as the employer. Now, certainly I don't mean to disparage the quality of attorneys in the locality, in southern Indiana or in Louisville, but certainly the employer has made that choice to seek counsel out of state. But as far as the insurance ratings, what's interesting is Jeff Boat is, in fact, in many of these cases, a self-insured employer, which that would not have an effect on insurance rates. But moreover, again, the insurance companies are national insurance companies. If they also take a look at the history, as I know insurance companies do, as part of their analysis, they look at the history of the cases, they look at the history of the claims paid out, they would notice what the landscape is as far as who has been representing claimants in this matter. And certainly that's a risk of the insurance carrier. There are mutual, my understanding is there are mutual association so that different employers pay into this association based on their employees and so on and so forth. So we submit to you that Judge Mosser, in fact, considered and evaluated the evidence before him within the confines of the law, within the confines of the regulations that he has available to him, very similarly following the finding in Ziegler-Cole versus Director OWCP before this very court, he made a determination and found attorney fees, granted attorney fees in the amount of approximately $1,600. The interesting thing is here that the employer must provide substantial evidence to indicate that, in fact, Judge Mosser abused his discretion, and, in fact, the BRB was inappropriate in their findings. The employer offered no evidence to contest that Judge Mosser is able to look at the complexities of the case, at the experience of the attorneys, the quality of the work, so on and so forth, those particular factors available to him under the law and the regulations. The only factor that the employer focused on was the prevailing market rate, but yet the only evidence it submitted was a 1999 case. The judge was not persuaded by that case. In fact, he discussed that in his very ruling, that the case that the employer provided indicating the attorney fees back in 1999, mind you, for work performed prior to the ruling of the judge for the 1999 case, Moreover, he submitted some other cases, the employer did, pardon me, that were not remotely similar to the case at hand. If I recall correctly, one of them had to do with landlord-tenant issues, one of them had to do with a collections issue, and another had to do with, I think, a cul-de-sac and real estate issue found in southern Indiana. That the judge was not persuaded by those cases is not an abuse of his discretion. Those cases were irrelevant, I would submit to the court. Finally, the employer, or the appellant in this matter, failed to produce any evidence that the judge abused his discretion in recognizing the quality of representation. In fact, the counsel in this matter did not enter his appearance until after the attorney fee decision was, until after, in fact, the claimant, myself, had entered my attorney fee petition, and that is when he entered his appearance. So he had no understanding or knowledge of what had happened prior to the decision, prior to the finding the successful prosecution on behalf of the claimant in this matter. If Your Honors have no further questions, I certainly would request that the BRB findings be affirmed and that Judge Mosher's findings and awards were affirmed that he did not abuse his discretion.
Thank you, Ms. Olson.
Thank you very much, Your Honors.
Matthews?
Excuse me.
Pardon me.
I would just like to touch on a few points in rebuttal. The fact that Ms. Olson asserts to the court that she's the only attorney who handles Longshore Act cases in the Louisville, Jeffersonville area is not a fact in evidence. And in fact, we have other claimants' counsels who file claims against Jeff Boat in the area. The fee application, I think, is something that we should focus upon. While it is said it's a sworn statement, the swearing on the statement only attests to the fact that the costs included on that statement are from the bookkeeper's entries. There is no sworn statement or affidavit in this record that was before the administrative law judge that the rates Ms. Olson was seeking were her actual rates, which she charges similar clients for similar services.
But we do know that at least one other administrative law judge in this area had awarded her those same rates.
Yes, and if you look at that case and the rationale for awarding that rate, neither in that case was evidence presented of actual rates. The judge there ruled that there was no opposition to the rate made by the employer, and two, the judge granted the rate based upon the complexity of the issues, quality of counsel, and the results obtained. And those are not the standards that are used in the calculation of the first portion of the Lodestar fee. So it's hard to accept another designation of a rate if that was improperly done in the first place. Thank you, Your Honor.
The case is taken under advisement. The court will proceed.